Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Gestalten. My name is Eric Galina, and I'm here with my colleague
Martin Groschwald. Hello, hello. Or ni hao.
Ni hao. Ni hao from Shanghai. We are reporting live from the Shanghai Auto Show. I think this is the 19th edition of this
18th.
So it's fairly new by Auto Show standards, but it's a big one. It's a massive one. There's 8 halls here. Some of the halls have 2 floors. Some of them are not all manufacturer halls, like not all car makers, some supplier halls, but still it's vast. And it's a very important show in a very important car market.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Frankfurt, this is bigger than Frankfurt.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, we were joking actually when we first arrived over here that for Frankfurt this year we're gonna take these little kickboards / scooters because we're too lazy just to wander around. We should have actually done that here because it's not just about, you know, how many halls it is. It's just the sheer size of the hall. So this convention center, from, you know, what we've been told by our colleague Daniel, is apparently the biggest of its kind in the world in terms of square meters and stuff like that. And you can see that this is a humongous place. You know, I've never seen that many car manufacturers in one specific area, and it's really, really impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
What's going on here, and it's a testament of what's happening in China still. It's not slowing down, quite the opposite actually. And you know, we are quite impressed. I think it took us a little bit to actually get through the show and, you know, find our, like, you know, most favorite places. But at the same time, there's so much to talk about here, and we will not be able to talk about everything. That would be impossible. So we will be focusing on, you know, what we think is the best stuff, maybe like the most surprising stuff as well. And, you know, some of the stuff, especially from a Chinese perspective, that has some, you know, connection with Europe, might be a studio or something like that. So, you know, we'll see how this review goes. But let's start with, we're here in hall 7.2, which is the second floor. Right over here is a Nissan, but we're sitting here at a very, very Chinese brand, which is called Venusia, which doesn't really sound very Chinese, but at the same time, it's owned by Dongfeng. And this is one of the things I think we can discuss right in the beginning is, you know, you have these big manufacturers like Geely and Dongfeng and all these kind of guys, but they have millions of sub-brands, and we see here how many sub-brands they have.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of manufacturers, a lot of sub-brands off of the back of manufacturers, a lot of joint ventures. I mean, so like as you alluded to earlier, there's been a kind of slowdown in sales, but just because it's not doing this anymore, it's not doing this. So it's just not the same level of growth that we've seen. But I think there's 496 like vehicle manufacturers. Some startups, and EV is, you know, really the name of the game here. Electric vehicles in China is really running the show. So there's a lot of new EV brands, and just brands that, you know, you've never heard of. And the thing is, walking around this show, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of manufacturers that are showing things that are, you know, perhaps relevant to the wider kind of world. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of very China-centric stuff being shown here. And so, you know, there's a lot of specific car makers that are showing things specifically intended for this market. As you mentioned, we're on this Venusia stand, which is a very Chinese brand. And it's not a brand new brand. It's been around for a little while. I remember coming here 10 years ago and seeing Venusia. It's a very Italianate kind of name. But what I've noticed walking around this show is not that, you know, there's cars specifically, not only that there's cars specifically intended for this market being developed, but also that the Chinese, even the startups, and some more than others, are really doing a great job communicating design very well. And yes. I think it has to be said that for the most part, these design organizations and these companies are run by Westerners. I think, you know, they are really putting in their salt and really making things that are showing through. I mean, you know, because some of these stands, the way that they're laid out, I've been looking at stands a lot this trip, and they, you know, there are just some ways that, you know, Chinese vehicle manufacturers choose to display their vehicles, which is very atypical to what you would find in a traditional motor show. I mean, I've got a few gripes, which we'll get into later, but I mean, there's definitely been a huge leap forward in terms of design, execution, and quality as I would say, from the Chinese automakers. It's no longer like, you know, copycat nation. There are still obviously certain bits which remind or have been influenced, shall we say.
Yeah,
I've seen a few funny ones.
Yeah, the you know, like, we're not yet in that kind of age where we say, you know, China is not copycat, you know, country anymore. I mean, you know,
it's less so, I would say. I mean, yeah, they're finding their own feet,
and I think this comes a lot through the branding perspective. Especially, I think the front runner with everything that's going on here in China with branding is Geely, and they have a huge stand, obviously, just down, you know, a few meters down here. But what they're doing with the branding is actually quite impressive. I mean, we've seen that with Lincoln Co., where they've done an exceptional job. They've now, you know, launched this new brand called Geometry as well. But Geely itself as well, also, like, you know, the communication that's going on with Lotus at the moment is, it's becoming much more professional. It's becoming much more, you know, very target oriented to, like, the audience that they actually want to sell those products to. So you can feel that here as well. I think, you know, some stands are still very flashy, and there's a lot of, like, you know, chrome or gold and stuff like that. But if you would ask me about, you know, what the brand image wants to be over here in China, it's about the cool, young, hip, you know, public that they wanna attract nowadays. And this is really impressive, because I think if we compare that to, you know, when we were in Geneva, for example, which was extremely conservative compared to what is going on here, the Chinese are going for the right people. And I think, you know, you see that struggling a little bit with the European brands in particular. I think, you know, Mercedes was quite old school, Porsche was in their general kind of style. Obviously, they have the brand name to them already, but, you know, are they really going all in terms of what they want to do? I'm not so sure. And I think, you know, to get more into this kind of Chinese market and, you know, avoid this kind of downfall of sales, as you mentioned earlier, I think, you know, they will have to adapt much more than they are doing now. And the brands over here are becoming much stronger. You know, we've seen that with NIO, for example, as well. That's going to be interesting to see. And I think, you know, kudos to the Chinese. I mean, you know, we've actually been looking forward to go to Shanghai for the show, but this was a good one. I mean, this was, you know, really impressive in terms of what's going on here. And, you know, compared to, like, you know, last year in Beijing or 2 years ago, this was a massive step forward for all these companies. And, you know, like, Europeans, watch out. If those companies want to come over to Europe, they will not be, like, you know, your little, I don't know, like, Dacia contender. They will come in with a proper brand, and they will come in with a very good communication strategy. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. US market, of course, the same.
Yes. No, I mean, there's definitely, like I said, I mean, there's some Chinese automakers that are definitely a force to be reckoned with. You know, Geely, some of these brands that are, you know, having other numerous other sub-brands below them, and partnerships indeed with other reputable automakers like Lotus, like Volvo, for example, are really making great strides in terms of their branding, in terms of their visibility, in terms of what it is that they're offering. But also, you know, there's certain things where, you know, and in China, we've seen this before. There's really a lot of things being developed very, very quickly. Yeah. And, you know, we've seen it in this city alone, you know, where the skyline of this city has evolved at such a rapid rate. I mean, and, you know, even 10 years ago, or, you know, it looked different, right? There's just buildings popping up, like,
and it seems like every single day is a new one.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's so much construction going on, and it's developing so quickly. And so the brands as well are developing. Now, the Geometry brand, the new one from Geely, you know, is something that I think was developed very quickly. Yeah. And it was, and it also, you know, I think there's a little kind of side note here to mention, is that some names sound cool in Chinese, which is why they use them. In Mandarin, you know, Geometry sounds different. Somebody told me what it was, can't remember what now. Yeah, it's Ji Ha or something. Like, it sounds pretty cool. And so we've seen a lot of vehicles like, you know, there was one like a Toyota CHR, which hasn't been entirely renamed. There's a few vehicles like that that have different names, like the Chevy Trailblazer, for example, is here as a CNR Carryall or something. I mean, it's so the same vehicle, basically identical, just has a different name. Now, getting back to Geely, put that side note away now, it seems like they really needed, you know, an electric brand to kind of move forward in terms of emissions and all of these things that people are doing now in terms of really just getting on board with what's happening in this industry, which is electric, electric, electric. I mean, that there's no more is that more obvious than in this country. I mean, electric is huge. And so they jumped in with this new brand, but they're using an existing platform. So I think, unfortunately, that car is a bit hampered by that. You know, of course, companies spend a whole lot of money developing, you know, architecture and platforms. And so, you know, when they can't just develop a new platform, it's extremely cost intensive. So they don't, you know, can't afford to develop an entirely new platform, but they need to launch that brand. And so, unfortunately, I think from an exterior perspective, because the interior on that car is actually very, very nice. I like the screens. I like the way that everything is kind of laid out. I like the material usage. I like the overall feel and the material, the quality of the interior. But I think, you know, in terms of an all-new kind of electric vehicle, for example, it's not utilizing a ground-up, you know, new package, which would really enable better proportions in that vehicle.
I think this is the downside on kind of, like, not the downside, but this is still where the branding issue comes, you know, comes into play very, very hard, is how to communicate your brand properly. And I think with the geometry brand, the Geely, we see that very, very closely. It looks a bit like a Geely. The logo is a Geely logo, but just in silver. So, you know, there's not that much difference to that. And I think, will those sub-brands all survive? No. Why do they do that? Well, it's because of government incentives. Yeah, so they get money because they're making new brands that employs people and stuff like that. You know, so there is a certain kind of business sense behind that as well. But I think you're absolutely right. And especially if we look into the other Geely cars, they go into like the design side from that side, they have this one concept car. It's called the Preface.
Yes.
Which, if you look it up online, it has this really nice blue turquoise color, and this one is actually really, really good. It's a really, really nice concept, and it looks very much production close. Obviously not with the doors, because it has, like, you know, the suicide doors, and that's not going to happen. It obviously doesn't have a B-pillar either, so, you know, that's the concept car bit of it. But everything that they're doing at the moment is really interesting from that perspective, and that is a really, really good show car. And you know, it's good stands, the wheelbase is looking really, really good, the overhangs are not extreme, it's just really well designed. But again, then comparing it to the geometry brand, it's just like, well, why can you not do that for something new? Like, you know, like, you are definitely capable of developing, like, you know, a language and developing the language further. We've seen that with Lincoln Co., we've seen that with Geely as well. So why rush with geometry?
Exactly.
It's you know, you've seen the capabilities that those companies have, and the sheer talent that those companies have. But it's sometimes, I don't know if it's about top level execution or if it's about something else, but, you know, it holds the design side, unfortunately, back a little bit. And this is where then these copycats come in as well, is because then the top level says, like, oh, you know, we like this car, so do that as well. So Geely has the upside and also the downside as well. But from my perspective, out of the Chinese ones, Geely is on the very top level of design from a Chinese perspective. I think maybe BYD can move into that kind of direction. They have had some good stuff recently, but Geely is, I think, the best one at the moment from a purely China-only perspective.
No, I don't disagree. I think the Preface show car is very, very nice. If that had been the new, you know, geometry brand, it would have been a different story. I mean, the stand, it must be said, though, I mean, the geometry stand is crowded. Like, there are so many people.
It looks like an Apple store as well. If you look into it, like, you know, it has the, if you've ever been to an Apple store, it has these, like, you know, wooden tables there, like, super simple. They have exactly that in there as well. And then there's only the cars, so it's a really nice stand. But yeah.
Yeah, it's only two cars. Yeah,
it's absolutely packed.
Yeah, one on the ground floor and then one on an elevated level where people are kind of shooting video and That is a very crowded stand. But I think, you know, if and that preface concept is very, very nice. I love the detailing. I like the headlamps. I like the grill. I like what they've done in terms of, you know, the proportionally, it's brilliant. Unfortunately, and this is one of my gripes that we're going to talk about because there are a few, in terms of, you know, just general access. Now, in, you know, this is not Shanghai 10 years ago. Yeah. The stands have evolved. It's way nicer, way better laid out, everything like that. However, the biggest issue that I'm having here is access. So if you look at some of these cars, they're behind like plexiglass. Some of the plexiglass isn't even transparent. You cannot enter. Like, even there's a new Toyota RAV4. They've got it on this stand, doors locked. Yeah. There's no interior access. Some of these show cars don't even have interiors. So that preface concept has an interior, but you can't get anywhere near it. So you can't see it, you know? You can't experience it. And that is a really a crying shame. But in 2019, to make an exterior-only concept car, it's like, come on, guys. I mean, really? Like, that's like the dark ages. It's not 2019. 2019, the interiors should be the ones that are on show.
And also on top of that, I think what we've, you know, what we've observed in the cars where you were able to go a little bit closer to was one very, very interesting thing, in my opinion, is that they're not using proper screens. Yeah, so the actual building quality of a lot of these show cars or concept cars, you know, is nowhere comparable to what we have seen in, you know, Detroit, even with, you know, Geneva, and I'm pretty sure what's going to happen in Frankfurt as well. And this is quite of a shame because it destroys the illusion a little bit. And what also has to say, I mean, you know, Chinese car shows are notorious for being super packed on press days. So usually what happens is, to give you a little bit of an insight, on the first press day, which was yesterday, on Tuesday, usually everything is open. It's, you know, you can go pretty much anywhere you want. On the second press day, it's a bit more restricted. They're already preparing for the public day. So the problem that we have is, like, you know, we felt like we were on the second press day on the first day already because you couldn't really look into the things. Even if you have access with, you know, the bosses themselves, they were just like, no, you can't go in there. It's like, guys, what's going on? Like, you know, and this is, let's say, mostly the Chinese companies. I think with the European ones, it's not a problem. You know, you'd be easily able to sit in the Audi, for example. And
yeah, that was an exception. I mean, you know, I went there and, you know, I knew the designer, like, you know, they invited me over. I went in there and I did a video and things, which I'll be publishing shortly. But it's you know, Western brands or Japanese brands, which are normally open. I mean, you know that RAV4 is done. It's like, why can't they open the door? And even, you know, people, I think, would come to expect that, you know, maybe you can't sit in a concept car. You need people around, hovering around like they do in Geneva, telling you, no, you can't sit. Obviously, you can't just jump into a concept car, which it's crazy. Like, even, you know, journalists that have been doing this for a living don't know this and still jump in and break things like they did in the Lagonda last show, you know, breaking like the steering wheel off. It's like, but anyway, regardless of that, I still think that they should show what they're thinking about. But at the same time, and this is another thing, you kind of have some reasoning as to why they're doing that. Let's not forget, we're in China. And, you know, again, you know, it's changed drastically since I first started coming out here. But there's still that kind of copycat element. There's still that, you know, I want to photograph every single nook and cranny and, like, you know, we're going to reverse engineer this type of thing. And there are these fears. Now, if you go to NIO, for example, they have a concept which is called the ET, quite hilarious.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous name.
No, it means something, actually, because they have
the E. Does it mean extraterrestrial?
No, it doesn't. It means electric technology. Now, they have electric SES, electric SUV. They also have EP, electric performance. So this is technology. And now, that car actually is 90% done. Yeah. I think, you know, it's definitely China's Tesla answer, without a doubt. NIO has that reputation, but it's also very well done. It's very well executed. It's very clean, and, you know, I mean, there are mixed reviews. Some people are like, "Oh, it's boring," or whatever.
That's me.
now it could be, but I think it's very elegant. It's very well done. From an exterior perspective, there are certain elements which are quite cool. And it's, yeah. You know, I spent a bit of time talking to NIO's exterior design director, and I mean, that car is 90% done, right? It's pretty much there, save for a few minor details, like the ride height is like 25 millimeters too high. The wheel size is going to decrease by, you know, one inch instead of 21s or 22s, rather, we'll have 21s. But regardless, it's going to be the same. Now, it's showing a new design kind of language for NIO. And it's very clean, and I like it. It's got the brand identity in the front. But the interior is actually done. It's done. They're just not showing it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I don't know internal reasoning why they are choosing not to show it. Could it be because they don't want somebody to come in and swoop in and
do it quicker
and start doing other things with that? But the NIO stand was definitely one that blew me away, though.
Fantastic,
I gotta say.
Stand.
It's showing, you know, NIO House, which is one of, I mean, they have 14 of these NIO houses spread across China, and that, it's, to me, is really, really a great way to differentiate from other brands. Now, if you buy a vehicle or you have one on order, you get membership. It's like, you know, to this club, to this NIO house, which has meeting rooms and like coffee shop and a daycare center. I mean, you know, they have their own clothing or brand products in there.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. And these things are massive. They're like the size of a small town. I mean, we are in the size of a small city right now. This convention center is massive. But that NIO house fitting in this convention center is pretty big. And so it was really cool to see that actually, you know, an actual NIO house here. And, you know, so NIO brought everything. They brought, like, you know, the
power as well. They brought
all sorts of new things and as well. But, you know, a lot of the old concept cars. So the EP9 is here. They have the ES.
The EVE is here as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. The EVE. So, you know, the ES, you know, SUV, of course, the one that's out on the roads, which we've seen a few of here. But, yeah, I think NIO is, you know, and we've talked about this before, you know, in terms of, like, you look at some of the traditional automakers here, and even though this is China and this is the world's biggest car market and this is really where you want to make it splash and show what it is that you've got going on, some of these traditional automakers still don't have even concept cars or new products. And they, of course, have to be here because they have to be here. But they don't necessarily have new product to show. To me, that's like, what are you doing, guys? I mean, this is Shanghai. You know, you should have a new product. If you've got a new product in the entire year, you should be showing it here. This is where you want to show it.
What you're mentioning is, I think, one important point. I had a conversation. I can't tell you who this, but like with a very, very high level executive from the car design world. And we were talking about where things are going. And I think NIO here in China, regardless of if you like the design or not, but what they're doing is like they're understanding that it's becoming a service. We're talking about mobility, we're talking about service all the time, but they're actually showing like what can we do. So the car is just one of the things that they do. So obviously it's mega present here because it is a car show. But, you know, they're trying to like breaking this up. There's like, you know, here's our power system. Like, you know, they actually had an entire swapping station where they showed how the car drives in, they change the battery, the car comes out again. So just to give you a little bit of a perspective, we're not talking with NIO about a car company anymore. We're talking about a mobility company, a service company. Mm-hmm. So it might be that NIO is not even here in 2 years or 4 years time, because for them, cars are just a necessity. Yeah, so they say, yeah, we have to show the cars or whatever. But this really shows where China is going as well. And for me, NIO is the first glimpse of the future. And it's really, it's kind of funny to then compare it to one of my biggest problems at the show. Was you had 3 or 4 Volkswagen stands. So just for you guys who don't know, Volkswagen, of course, was here as like the Volkswagen brand. Then there was a stand just for SAIC Volkswagen, because there's a joint venture and they produce Volkswagens here in China. And then there's another one, which was FAW Volkswagen, that was here as well, which is the joint venture with FAW that they have, and Škoda and all these kind of things. So you have 3 Volkswagen brands all showing somehow the same cars. And then on the other hand, you have NIO that doesn't show you, you know, 100 million cars. They show you a lot of cars in terms of like you can sit on them and stuff like that. But you know, they show you like, no, this is a service, like this is the overall thing. And you know, Volkswagen has done like, you know, they could have rented an entire hall just with all their stuff with Audi as well, and you would have probably only used one stand, because on the rest, you know, you've seen the China produced cars and all these things. You know, there is this big discrepancy over here, and I think, you know, with NIO is showing where the future of car shows actually could go to. We were discussing this before, you know, will we have car shows in the next 2 years? With something like NIO, yes, we will, because then the car show will evolve into like mobility, into service, but the car is still a fundamental part of that. So, you know, that's going to be interesting, because it's a much better picture, again, branding wise, and what they want to paint, where they're going, than, you know, like, you know, even Volkswagen.
Yeah, no. There's one Volkswagen that you mentioned, that you failed to mention, rather, was the Jetta. Another. So they've got like three products, basically two of which are just rebranded Volkswagen Group products. So they've got a Seat SUV that is now a Jetta. They have obviously the trusted Jetta, which is called something else here, and I'm blanking on what that is. But anyway, so they have three new products. They're not all Volkswagen, but they're all Volkswagen Group products, two of which are like SUV crossover, have been rebranded from Seat and Skoda, and one is a traditional Volkswagen product here in China, and so now that is the Jetta brand,
the separate Jetta brand.
So that's another Volkswagen stand, and there's a lot of Volkswagen stands, yes, but what I was talking about is the legacy automakers are showcasing things that are going to be traditional kind of business as usual, so building another brand because you could sell more cars, without thinking about the whole mobility aspect as NIO is, as perhaps even Volvo is, and they showed that before in LA, for example, where they didn't have cars on the stand the first day. But it's interesting that there are these companies and the legacy automakers are kind of stuck in this rut, if you will, and unable to kind of evolve and move forward. And you look at big automakers like GM and JLR, and they're really struggling because there's a shift that needs to take place. And we've talked about this already, obviously, in previous podcasts, where there's a lot of things, the changes that are happening, restructuring, and people are, you know, being laid off, made redundant because of these structural changes that are happening within these legacy organizations. And NIO is kind of a safe bet. All of these startups are like much safer bets than they were ever in the past. You know, because they're actually looking at the big picture. They're looking at where can we be in 10 years? You know, what are we, you know, and they're really, they've got the, they're playing long. And that's I think, what's very important to note is that we're seeing some, you know, automakers that are brand new, that are really looking into the future, and some are like executing this better than others. But it's really very, very interesting to see.
It sure is. It sure is. But you know, let's move on and actually discuss the cars in
detail. Let's do this.
Because like, you know, that's what we're here for in the end.
Yeah.
Let's actually start with the NIO. The NIO ET. That's phony home. Sorry, I just let like that slide. So, it is a sedan, and we had a big discussion about this yesterday. You already mentioned you like it. My personal opinion on it is, it's kind of a bit too conservative. I mean, I understand that obviously they have to do, you know, that to kind of sell the cars. They've now shown the ES6 as well, you know. So the ET will then be the sedan. It's called Preview as well. So it's actually, as you mentioned, it is almost done. I just don't see the point. Like, for me, the biggest problem with that is it's not progressive enough to justify a price that might be similar to an ES8. Yeah? What is the difference in that? I mean, the Chinese obviously love the NOMI system, so that will be in there. But moving forward from an exterior perspective, where are they moving towards, you know? And from my side, the biggest issue is the front. I don't think the front is well resolved. I mean, they've chosen obviously the face in the ES8. So I'm not 100% sure if they can move that into, you know, further kind of vehicles that might not be an SUV. You see that struggling here a little bit. Actually, the shoulders are quite nice, sometimes a little bit too wide, I think, on the rear. But the side view is very well resolved. I think if you look into it just from the side, it's not a bad car. But like, you know, it's that kind of thing. It misses the details. I think this is what makes it. Yeah, it looks nice. It's good, but at the same time, it's not like for me this kind of outstanding things. Like, whoa, everybody has to see that. There's, you know, a few bits and pieces missing in terms of, you know, details, and obviously the interior, where I'm just not 100% convinced.
Yeah, I mean, it's not rewriting anything. I do like, it's got the corporate face, so it's got the Neo kind of logo thing going on, which is very well done, I think. It's not like, you know, breaking any rules, it's not revolutionary, but it is well done. And, you know, proportionately, that's all that they looked at, clearly, because I think it's very well done. You know, you talked about the side profile. That obviously is very well. When you look at that car in side view, it's just everything is right. Everything is perfect, you know. And I like the haunches at the rear. I like the line across the C-pillar. I like all of these kind of elements. And it's pretty restrained. But then again, you look at Tesla, and it's not like, you know, revolutionary in terms of design. I think this one is a step forward in that regard. And Teslas are massively successful. So if you've got a homegrown brand that's showing a similar aesthetic, I'm not going to say that it's copying Tesla because it's not, but it's a very similar, very controlled, very simple aesthetic that I think is very appealing. It's very elegant, you know, and so I think that's great. And again, it does have an interior. It's just all the windows are like, you know, limo tint, so you can't see inside and, you know, sit in it or check it out. But I think it's good. But that's not my star of the show. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, when you walk around here, you know, there are cars that we've seen in the past. There are cars that are also evolving a theme. The Infiniti is a clear example. Yeah. That is a very, very good, very well resolved, something that's really much closer to production, so I'm told, is going to be, you know, a reality for that brand. And I think, you know, they're finding their groove, you know, under Karim Habib. Now it's like, it's a very clear differentiation from the, because we talked about this, I think, as well, where, you know, what is Nissan? What is Infiniti? It's kind of blurring the boundaries. And yes, it is in certain elements, like the surfacing, for example. For a while, there was too much kind of similarity. But now we're seeing clear differentiation between the brands, certainly from these concepts that we've seen in recent times. So, you know, the IMAX, the IMQ that was shown in Geneva, and now these Infiniti, you know, Inspiration Q and Infiniti Inspiration QS, which is the new one here for Shanghai. I don't think it's for Shanghai, but it's definitely a more sporting, you know, when you look at, for example, in the carpeting, there's this like reddish tone, and there's kind of like little red accents within the front driver's seat area of that vehicle, which were not on the previous Infiniti concept, which was shown in Detroit. The SUV was more of an SUV. This is more of a sedan, and it is brilliant. It's again very muted, you know, colorways on the interior, really showing Japanese inspiration and luxury. The interior was designed in Japan, like the other one. The exterior came out of London, you know, and it was brilliant work again with from the NDE studio, because I think it's just bang on what it needs to be. And the front face is very different than anything that we've seen before, and they're really finding their own identity. So I think that is one of the highlights of the show here for me.
100% agree. And you know, we don't want to sound boring, because it seems like at the moment every time we do one of these show reviews, Infiniti comes out on top, but they're just doing an incredibly good job at the moment. I think this entire leadership that's at the Infiniti brand at the moment, starting with Karim, also with, you know, Matt Weaver, but also with people down there such as Stefan Janot, like, you know, Taisuke, but like also really talented people that are working on this. You know, it's not a lot of people, but it's just a bunch of really talented guys, and you feel that they want to do something. Now, we had a conversation obviously with a bunch of Infiniti people, and we said, like, we hope you're actually allowed to put it into production as closely as possible. That is obviously the big question mark, if that's really going to come in exactly that way. But they're just doing a lot of things right at the moment. And I think if you, even if you start looking into, like, you know, what was the Project 10, which was the first car that Karim actually, you know, did, the evolution from that into, like, you know, an SUV, more like a coupe version now, is incredible. And I think I want them to succeed. I really do. It's be, you know, obviously they pulled out of the European market recently. Maybe they're coming back, maybe they're not coming back. But if they're moving towards that, you know, this car will be a success here in China, will be a success over here in the US as well. And that should be the direction to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've said it before, I'm quite sure on this podcast before, but I grew up in the States, obviously. I was there at the inception of the Infiniti brand, and it's quite interesting to see, because the Q45, when it came out, did not have a grille. So when you look back into the history of the Infiniti brand, which is not a very long history at all, but, you know, again, at the same time as Toyota in 1989, that brand was launched. And it was launched with some really innovative, you know, vehicles at the time. You know, not only the Q45, but then they came out with the J30, which was like, you know, this kind of sloping rear. And then, you know, the FX, you know, and we can't forget the FX, because we're in front of this Venusia concept right now. And this is a performance concept. I forget what it's called. Anyway, it's like the Vision X, or anyway, something like that. They've got two cars here, and this is basically very, very similar to what the FX was. And we're talking, what, almost 20 years, more than that. I mean, you know, almost 30 years ago. So that FX was groundbreaking. Nissan did not do a very good job marketing that vehicle. But Infiniti as a whole, as a company, was extremely innovative until, I don't know what happened, but they lost their nerve and they started doing things like the, you know, M35, which, look it up, it's a horrendous little box. And then the G20, which is a rebranded Nissan Primera. So it's a shame that that happened. But it's, again, finding its mojo. And I don't want to spend too much time on Infiniti, because it does seem like we've spoken about them before. And I mean, it is definitely one of the highlights of the show. I wouldn't put it at the very top. But there's other things that, again, we're in Shanghai, which is a very different market. China is a very different market than anywhere else. So you talked about the conservatism that we saw in Geneva, and certainly in the European market in general. In the US as well, it doesn't seem like, but here it's all about anime and flash and graphic. And this is actually pretty cool when you get close to it. Certainly in the headlights and the tail light, like the whole, like, even the surfacing is actually quite good. The panel gaps are good.
Of the Venusia concept.
Of the Venusia concept here behind us. Opposite me is, you know, maybe we'll show it in another kind of overlay here, but is a thing called the Geon Matchless, and that is an absolute atrocity. But anyway, it looks like a semi truck from the front, like proper. It's everything is wrong about that car. But anyway, and I'm looking at it right now. But what's behind me is actually doing a very good job in communicating, you know, branding, for example, with the V, and, you know, in the cant rail. You know, the other SUV, which is over here in Alishaw, is also nice. I mean, it does have some overtones of Range Rover, and certainly Land Rover is very popular. SUVs are very popular, as are minivans here in this market. But it's more, you know, like the gold trim and the, again, the graphics. You know, it's all about graphics. I mean, and which is why I think we can move into another thing, is one of the highlights of this show is Audi. And if we talk about graphics, I mean, you're talking parametric design on this thing, like, there's no tomorrow. Graphically, that car is spot on for this market, you know. And, you know, they've got lots of really cool things. I'm more, I don't know, you know, maybe I'm getting old, but I'm less about the crazy graphic, like, split up. Like, aesthetic of the exterior, but the interior is, you know, is really, really very cool and calm and tranquil, and with the real plants floating around in there, and the wood, it's very warm, and but at the same time, it's, you know, geared towards car sharing. It's, I think it's a very, very well resolved piece, and I spent some, you know, a bit of time talking to the designers, as we mentioned, you know, for UI and UX as well. You know, it's got a great story, and you know, I think, yes, it's not to everyone's taste. I've definitely seen a lot of negative commentary, you know, floating around about that car. But I think, you know, in terms of, you know, lighting, for example, Audi's always kind of led in that regard, in that area. And I think it's a very, very nice little thing. And that stand is swamped because of it's an Audi, maybe. But it's, I think it's very cool. And to see it side by side next to the Akon, which we've seen before.
Which is the big brother,
yes,
pretty much.
Is also very interesting.
So what's it called? It's the AME or AIME? Or
AIME, I want to say, yeah. Artificial Intelligence Mobility Experience.
Yeah.
That sounds about right, doesn't it? I don't know, I just pulled that out of my magician's hat.
I think, from my perspective and from what I've heard, this car is a little bit of the successor of the A2.
You know? That's what some people have been saying. Yes, yeah. I don't think Audi said it.
No, Audi hasn't said that. But it's, you know, it's kind of a little bit of the rumor, like, you know, the communication of what's going on. And, you know, I do agree with you on the interior. I think, you know, they have done a very, very good job. Audi has recently done some very good interiors. I mean, the A8 was another example that was really, really well resolved. The exterior, I find it tricky. I find it difficult. It's obviously, for us Europeans, it's a little bit too much. But then again, you've mentioned the parametrics around it. You know, parametrics is the hottest thing in China. Like, everything, every car, every grill has to be done, like, you know, parametrically. And, you know, if you don't have it, then you're not cool enough for the market and all these things. So they understand that this car is for a China market. Yeah. Now, the biggest problem that I can see, and this coming back a little bit to the Neo problem, is that Audi still doesn't have an idea what autonomous driving is for them. And this car shows that again. There's no continuous idea in those concept cars. What is autonomous driving for you? You know, and they say, like, oh, you know, we're the leader of innovation and everything within the Volkswagen group. And yeah, they do have a lot of problems because of the Dieselgate still, but they're not really pushing, you know, like, this innovation in terms of an intelligent innovation. Yeah, so why is autonomous driving doing one thing? Why is autonomous driving doing one thing in another thing to the car? And this is something that I found a little bit sad, I think, you know, because there's so much potential in there. Similar thing, you know, goes to the Volkswagen ID Rooms, I think it's called, you know. I saw it and I was just like, again, it's well made. You know, there's nothing wrong about it, but at the same time, why? You know, where is the development of that? You know, it's just that, so it seems like ID, okay, we need to do something because of this Dieselgate. Let's do electric cars. Are they fundamentally well made? No. Like, you know, there's this kind of, it's almost like the Chinese mentality. Let's push something out very, very quickly rather than, you know, to, like, step back a little bit, really work about it, you know, work with it, develop it a little bit, and then come out with something incredible. This was the same feeling I had with the Audi. It was just like, oh, you know, crap, we need to do something. So let's do something in, like, 6 months or, like, 3 months or whatever, and then build that car. And that's a little bit sad because I think, especially compared to the Infiniti, in the Infiniti, there's always a progression. They know what they want to do, but you can always track it back to the last one, and you know where the ideas are coming from. And this is something that I worry a little bit from design development. I'm going to be very interested to see what's going to happen in Frankfurt, what Audi's going to do there. But it kind of goes hand in hand, you know, with their problems of finding the face again, you know, in the grill and you know, what is that supposed to mean? And it's the kind of emphasis for me on what's the problem at Audi at the moment is this, it's not deciding where to go and then go with it. It's more just like, oh, let's try this and let's try that. And I understand where concept cars are coming from, but in particular, you see the Akon and you see the AIME. You know, I have my problems a little bit in that, where is the following through? And that's a little bit sad because I think, you know, they have all this potential, but are they going all the way? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not in love with what they're doing. And you're right. I mean, it is kind of missing some continuity, but I think there is a story there. I think, you know, in terms of car sharing, in terms of, you know, what is a vehicle from an Audi perspective, and certainly a car sharing vehicle, because they're not really a car sharing company, right? I mean, this is like a premium brand. It's very well known within the elitist group and the government here in China. It's always kind of had this high class kind of notoriety. So for them to kind of come out and show something like that AIME or AIME, which is, you know, to love in French, which is great, strange. Anyway, I think they're exploring, right? It's a concept car. It's not a production car. They're exploring. They're looking at their options, trying to find their way. And, you know, that car does have some cool ideas. You know, and if we conversely look at, you know, what's happening on the other side of the Volkswagen group is, you know, Volkswagen ID rooms, all of these ID concepts, it's just a bit old world to me. I mean, swivel seats coming out, like, come on, guys. Like, you know, that's like a decade old, yes. Man. And so, I don't know. Maybe it's, again, the problem with, you know, the Volkswagen legacy. I mean, you know, at the time, De Silva was like all like simple and purity, going back to the De Silva days now. You know, these cars, I don't want to say they bore me, but it's just like, there's, you know, ID, it's like, there's no like adventure, no sensuality, no like, it's more product design, but like simple, like bare, like this couch product design type thing. I don't know. I'm just not overly enthusiastic about any of the ID concepts that we've shown, except maybe the first one. I thought had, you know, some cool, you know, and colorways and things as well, like, you know, some cool kind of branding-ish ideas and things. But the last little buggy thing, I mean, come on, like, what? That was a joke. I don't know if that was just like, you know, meant to showcase the kind of bandwidth of their platform or whatever. Yeah. But this ID rooms, you know, again, is showing a very similar aesthetic, and but it's not rewriting anything, and it's not, you know, particularly adventurous. And I think Audi is taking a, you know, taking it to, you know, explore different areas as to where it is that they could potentially go in terms of design for what is a very changing and rapidly evolving you know, space.
You know, like, if you understand a little bit of Volkswagen, what is interesting about them is they only do show cars, concept cars on platforms that are feasible. So when we see, like, you know, the Infiniti P10, for example, that's not a platform that we will see on the street. So Volkswagen has this commitment that they show every car that we show on in a car show or an event can actually be produced. Maybe they should get away from that now. it's obviously an idea where I'm saying maybe it's time to do that, to show a little bit more. Hey, look, we have new ideas. We have different ways of doing things, and to really kind of bring the brand back up. Because that we get into that problem, which is like, yeah, you know, what is it? It's a show car, like, do you actually want to produce it? Or, like, you know, where is the line?
Maybe they should do what BMW did, you know, in terms of, like, showing, you know, the concept is, like, 80-90% there, right? Yeah. But then they show the visions.
The visions, yes, correct.
And the visions is, like, blue sky thinking, like, crazy, like, you know, out there.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah,
that would be a good idea.
That would be good. You know, again, you mentioned Dieselgate. Yeah. That's not, you know, so far back in the rear view. It's still something that they're grappling with right now. And it, you know, Volkswagen's a behemoth. They have a whole lot of cash, but they can't necessarily, you know, just be tossing it around right now. Yeah, because, you know, that was a real big deal, Dieselgate. Yeah. And they're still paying for that, and they will be for a little while. But anyway,
let's move on.
With you. Yes, that was good.
Next one, which one stuck to our minds where we say, like, this was another great one? Because this is the problem about Shanghai a little bit. It's a very production show, yeah. So a lot of the cars that you will see here are actually going into production or production ready. You don't have that many show cars or concept cars around here. So I think I'm struggling a little bit to find, you know, to come up with one that was new to here as well, I think.
Right.
That's the thing. They recycled a number of things, like Škoda showed the IV.
Vision,
The Vision car, the yellow one from Geneva. I saw, what was it? I think Kia showed their Geneva car here as well, so you know, there wasn't that many of the new cars around here, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, you're right, and a lot of it is kind of recycled, you know, I mean, not recycled, but, you know, if you've been to other motor shows, you would have seen some of the things that, you know, European and...
the Mercedes.
Oh, right.
The Mercedes.
So that's a new one. Yeah, the little, what is it? The little...
GBQ or whatever it's called? I have no idea. It's like
GLB.
GLB.
What is... The G-Class, right?
Forgive us about the name.
Sorry, but. I'm blanking right now. But it's basically a little...
it's a B-Class on GLE platform.
Exactly. No, it's like the big guy. And anyway, it's crazy. Not only are we jet lagged, but we have not been sleeping very much since we got here. We're on Shanghai time and Shanghai brain. So sorry about that. But yeah, it's a G-Class, right? I think it's a G-Class, the big guy. Anyway,
It's based on the GLE, but it's, I think... Yeah, it's based on the GLE.
Well, it looks butch.
Yeah, whatever.
And I haven't actually spent much time. Now, the thing is, as we mentioned before, the show is vast. I haven't even seen everything that I want to see that is new. What I have seen has mostly been from the Chinese automakers, just because I want to get my head around everything that's happening, which is very difficult and complicated, hence why I think my brain is having a bit of an issue right now, remembering even, like, you know, something as old as the G-Wagon. But anyway, there are, like, a lot of concepts and a lot of new cars, and I think this is where you want to be showing those things, you know, your ideas, you know, and you want to be present in this market, because this show is going to get some massive coverage, and again, it's a very important market, so either Shanghai or Beijing, people are going to be showing things. And so when I see things like, you know, legacy automakers like Cadillac, for example, who are actually present here, you know, and they're not showing things. Buick has a few things. But
Cadillac had that one black on black show car, I think. You know,
what is it, a show car?
I think it's a show car. Or is it?
I think it's an XT6. They just have an XT6. Anyway, I haven't seen a new thing at Cadillac, so I could be mistaken. But, you know, again, this show is vast. I haven't covered all of it. I have seen a few things. I think it's interesting, you know, to see the Karma Pininfarina partnership taking shape. That car is obviously extremely dated. The original Fisker Karma was produced, a long time ago?
Was that, like, in 2008, I think, that came out?
A long time ago, so
but,
over a decade for sure.
But, okay, so let's talk about this, actually, because there was this weird thing, and we talked about this with Karma, where they have an internal design team,
yes,
which designed the GT version, and then there's the Pininfarina car as well. So they gave one out to Pininfarina and one did it internally.
Yep.
Now, I'm not quite sure if you agree on this one, but it looks to me with, you know, the Batista that we saw in Geneva, now with this stuff that comes out from Pininfarina for Karma, is that Pininfarina has problems of losing this Ferrari vibe, especially in the front. I think, you know, the front of the Karma has way too many indications that it could be a Ferrari. You'd have some hints on a Lamborghini, and from the side view, it looks like a DB11. So they pretty much just, like, you know, stretch the DB11 a little bit, and then that's pretty much that car. So do you actually think that, you know, Pininfarina, from that kind of side, from, you know, from the stuff that we have seen now, are actually still capable of developing, you know, new identities, or do you think they're stuck? Because I have this feeling when I saw the Karma, I was like, whoa, is this really, like, you know, what is this? Is this a Ferrari, or, like, you know, I have no idea. So it was a little bit strange to see that, you know, it seems like they don't have their mojo. It's more like, oh, you know, let's look into the past, what we've done, and then they always come back to Ferraris.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because obviously Pininfarina has a very long history of producing Ferraris, and they were very successful and they were renowned for that. So to come back to that aesthetic is not bad per se, but it's definitely not what a traditional coach builder would do traditionally. So, you know, typically there were, you know, idea farms where you would go and they would give you something and, you know, they would then create a brand for you. Now, I don't know, maybe they are kind of stuck in this Ferrari kind of era or, you know, aesthetic where, you know, I'm sure a lot of people within Pininfarina have been working on that within the company for a while, and have therefore found something that, why throw the baby out with the bathwater type thing? Let's continue building on something that's successful. Now, perhaps that's the thing. But as you mentioned, Karma does have an internal design team. With Pen and Farina coming on board, that's, a little bit shrunken in size. They certainly, they don't have what they did have, certainly under Fisker back in the day. But it's interesting, and it was due time, really high time, to build on the initial Karma, because, like we said, that design is dated, and it's been through and then some. So, you have to kind of do something that is going to be an evolution of the brand, show the brand's next steps, where are they going, what are they going to do, what could potentially be a desired action. These are concept cars as well. None of them are actually production ready, right?
Yeah.
It's just, again, just seeing what's possible. I think the partnership between Pininfarina and Karma will develop into hopefully creating something and opening up into, something that is more than certainly just one model, and certainly more than what we've seen take place on the Karma in the past. So I think that is going to be a fruitful one. I don't know. Do you want to say anything?
No, I think, this is still something that's very much China, I think, where the Chinese money is coming from is, they go to companies such as Pininfarina. Icona is another example, rather than developing their own story, and I think, especially with those Chinese car companies, to do that is probably not a great idea. Like, no offense to Pininfarina or Karma, but Icona, but they are not companies that build brands. They do sketches, they develop a car, but those are not fundamental companies that build brands.
That should happen internally for sure.
Exactly, and I think we can see that. And Karma was a little bit like that, because the Pininfarina car, if you don't have the Karma logo on there, could be anything. There was nothing that was particularly a Karma that I would then just say, that's it, And you can see that a lot of times. I mean, we spoke with a lot of people from Geely, for example, and they told us, because we need this kind of capacity, you can see that in the cars as well. I mean, we see so many cars over here that have different front faces, where you ask the question, how can this happen? And it happens because of that. So, there's still a long way to go, and at these shows, don't get us wrong, Shanghai is incredible in terms of a show. I mean, you have so many people around here. If you really want to meet your peer or your peer group, you have to come to Shanghai. It's the number one spot because of the market situation. Every big name pretty much comes here. With the only exception of obviously the guys from Hyundai, because they're in New York at the moment. Mm. But everybody is here. So if you really want to get to know your peers, or if you want to meet them after... I met someone yesterday that, I spoke with him, and he saw someone he hadn't seen for 17 years. Shanghai is that show where the people are coming together because of the market. And that's for me, the biggest takeaway, I think, of the shows. There's a lot of development to go still in China. And I think a lot of growing within the companies as well. But we've seen a very positive move towards good design quality.
Mm-hmm.
And
certainly,
also,
yes.
Also, just let's say good design. Yeah, it's not exceptional. It's kind of boring to say, but the Infiniti was by far the best one, I think, to kind of show really creativity in what that kind of creativity can do to a brand. But the overall quality over here is really good. I mean, the average level, the median is really nice, and much better than, for example, and I would say in Detroit. The Detroit median was much lower. You had some really big highs, but you had some very deep lows. You have some very deep lows here as well, like this, Gion thing or whatever it's called. But the average thing is, like, I think if you were in China and you said, like, oh, I have a budget and a limited budget and I want to buy a car, you will find a car here that you will like for a very reasonable price. If that is a Dongfeng, if that's a Geely, if that's a Chang'an, SAIC. I mean, we haven't spoken about Chang'an and SAIC.
Yeah. And GAC as well.
GAC, they've shown
Yeah, GAC showed actually the concept that they had in Detroit. They're showing that here, so yes. It's been recycled. So
yeah, but there's a couple of new products as well on the stand. But I mean, you know, there are a lot of new cars here, and certainly from the Chinese brands, you know, certainly things that we haven't seen. I think GAC has like three different cars, like S, and anyway, and the names also, it's really quite confusing if you're not aware of everything that's happening. But I don't know. I mean, there are some cool things. You're absolutely right in terms of like quality. There's still some companies that are being led by engineering. You can see it. It's wrong. Wheel dimensions, or you know, just glass to body ratio, or you know, I mean, all sorts of things where the package is not clearly being taken on from design and being handed down to them. You know, just like spacing within the wheel arches, ride height. I mean, all sorts of things that just aren't correct. And you know, unfortunately, you know, some brands are suffering. But overall, yes, quality has taken, you know, has leaps and bounds forward. But again, that's because China is developing very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been a good show so far, and you know, we haven't spoken all that much, unfortunately, about design. I think this show around, there are some cool things. It's certainly worth a trip out here
If you're around.
Yeah, I mean. You know, it's just a shame that you can't get into cars and that you can't see interiors, and that some manufacturers just completely didn't even bother with developing interiors. And that's really my only biggest issue is, you know, in 2019, we should be seeing more interiors than we are here at this show. But anyway, cool. It's been a good one.
Yeah.
And,
so before we leave.
Enjoyed it.
Before we leave, as always... Best concept car.
Oh, we're gonna do that.
Best production car, and worst of the show. You can choose which one you want to start with.
All right. Best concept, man. I don't know. I'm just gonna highlight the things that I've seen that I liked. The Audi, I liked. That's a concept, clearly, but I think it's cool. I think it's great for this market. I think yes, it is very busy. Yes, there are some things that people, certainly if you're traditional, more conservative, you're not going to enjoy what's happening within the exterior of that vehicle. The interior, I think, is very nice. It's not groundbreaking to have your steering wheel come out, but I think, you know, the eye detect, the way that everything kind of works and moves, and, you know, the way that the interior kind of adapts, and the colorways and the kind of tones and the way that it makes you feel, and the live plants and things like that, it's very inviting and welcoming and serene and calm, and I think that's really cool. And so I like that, you know, Audi from a concept perspective.
Cool. I'll take the... I don't want to sound that, you know.
You'll take the Infiniti, of course.
I'll take the Infiniti.
Of course you will, I know.
The Infiniti is really nice now.
I like the Infiniti as well. There's no question about it.
But like, I have to say, I mean, obviously, I would like to say, like, there's, I think, two. So, like, for me, from a Western perspective, or, like, you know, let's say more established car companies, the Infiniti is clearly the car to go to at the show, especially in terms of the story that they tell with other three show cars in the whole process. But I want to say one thing as well, and this is why it's a tie for me. I like that Geely a lot.
Yes, yeah? I agree. Very
that
nice.
That Geely preface is super nice, and it's credit where credit's due. Really well done, and you know, for me, from like a Chinese car manufacturer, really not bad. Really, really not bad.
I agree. It's very, very well done. Very nice. I wish that I could have gotten a bit of a better look on the interior. To me, you know, I don't know. I've been in this game for a while, and exterior, of course, it's still, you know, but I think what's going to be driving us forward, and pardon the pun, is the interiors. And if you can't actually get a good look at it, I mean, you know, it's a shame. If you look at like something like Cantu, for example, Dan Duranko's brand, you know, the Dragonfly emblem, it's very China. But that interior, this is a concept that was shown last year, I think, in Beijing, is actually really nice. You know, the colorway split, the, you know, chauffeur during the week, driver during the weekend, It's a cool story. It's a very nice story, and it's a very relevant
and well executed as well.
Yeah,
I think
story,
that's the point. Okay, so production car.
I have absolutely no idea. I'm going to let you go first on that one because I have absolutely no idea production wise.
Out of the new ones, to be honest, I'm struggling.
Something that made its debut here. Like, I don't even know. I haven't seen anything that's made its debut here that is worthy of a prize from me.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I mean, there was a lot of solid stuff, but was there, like, you know, a hands down, you know, production car? Like, you know, we had in Geneva, we had the Peugeot 208, where we just said, like, yeah, this was fantastic, and you know, hands down.
Yeah.
Probably not. You know, for me, what was cool, XC40 facelift, that was, you know, like, for here, for China, that was not bad. But for the other guys, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a loss as well. I've been looking down here, you know, because I took some notes on my phone. I'm actually trying to consult with my phone to see what it is that we've seen that's been revealed at the show that's production. And, you know, there's not, like, all that much, like, you know. If you look at it, some of it, like, you know, Lexus LM is, like, just putting grafting a Lexus face onto an existing minivan, one of which we saw actually driving around today, you know, on our way to the show. There isn't all that much that's, like, you know, really interesting. I don't know. I mean, you know, if we start going down the facelift route, you know, then we can talk Lincoln Co., right? Yeah. I mean, I actually like their... In the beginning, I have to say, when I first saw it, another Geely brand, again, much me said, Geely owns a lot of brands. and Lincoln Co., at first, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not really all that sure about this kind of front face identity. It looked like a bug, and then the rear lights, it's like, eh. I think it's it takes a while to kind of grow on you, but I think we've seen, again, a few kind of driving around on the road, and I think, you know, from a facelift perspective,
it looks good.
It's nice.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's not a all new production designed by a long shot, but anyway, cool. I thought it was cool. But.
So let's leave the production out there because I think that's
there's been a lot of facelifts
tricky.
Actually. Yeah,
a lot of facelifts here. So, worst of the show, my absolute favorite category all the time. Do you want to start or?
I might as well. I'm staring at the thing. I've been looking at the thing for the last hour. This thing is horrendous. Eddie, our guy is
our production
man is going to, like, hopefully get a shot of this thing and just overlay it because I can't do it justice in words, and I don't want to. It's horrendous from a surfacing perspective, from a lighting perspective, even the message on the front. Like, I mean, it's got everything, right? It's got everything that a, like, modern day electric sedan should have. It's actually it's a wagon, actually, because it's, you know, it's a hatchback. It's a sportback, but it's just horribly executed. Everything, like the wheels, the stance, the front face, like I said, it looks like a semi truck barreling down at you, but it's got that, you know, that screen in the front, but again, horrendous.
So it's the Gion, and actually let's put it down to the name. It's called the Matchless. And that's probably what it is. So, all right, now I'm gonna say something controversial here. We discussed this actually before. We've seen this over here at the show for the first time. I think it was actually, like, you know, the official, like, you know, public premiere. Porsche Cayenne Coupe.
I haven't actually seen that. I haven't gone
horrible,
to the Porsche
horrible, horrible. Now, you know, I've said bad things about this thing already, like, you know, in our last conversation. But, man, no, this is just not needed anymore. It's like, you know, what is it? Like, you know, it's not a Macan, it's not a Cayenne. It looks horrible. The turbo version is slightly better. The normal version, man, just throw it in the bin right away. Of course, it's going to sell shitloads over here in China because it's obviously, like, you know, it's Porsche, it's an SUV. So they will be fine with doing that. But for me, absolutely horrible, definitely worst of the show. And I know I'm going to get a lot of stick for that because, you know, I know a lot of our people that listen and watch, they do like Porsches. But that one, unfortunately, is for the bin.
Well, if you, you know, I mean, a lot of people like, I like Porsches, you know. I'm not a big fan of what they've done with the SUVs. This, as you mentioned, is probably going to be a runaway success over here in China. I do not doubt that. If you look around at a lot of these cars that have been unveiled from a number of different manufacturers,
they are effectively replicating what Porsche has done, like in the rear lighting in particular. Like, you know, so many of these kind of sportback, you know, fastback vehicles that we've seen in concept and production form from a number of automakers, I can't even begin to list them all, are referencing what Porsche did with the Panamera. And now the new 911. I mean, there's so much Porsche in a lot of these rear ends, you know, and a lot of these tail lamp graphics, for example. The really thin band running across, and the, you know, the four, like, I mean, it's so definitely a trendsetter, Porsche. And again, they wouldn't even be around if they hadn't done the first Cayenne. So, you know, and again, you know, this market here, it's funny because when I first arrived in Shanghai, I saw a lot of traditional Porsches, so 911s and Cayman and Panameras, you know, more car-oriented. Not that the Panamera is a traditional Porsche in my view, but and then, you know, we didn't see that many SUVs, like not many Macans and Cayennes. And then, you know, over time we started to see more of them. And, you know, in this market in particular, SUVs sell way, way more. And there are some local automakers. You mentioned as well, Build Your Dreams, BYD, with Mr. Wolfgang Egger at the helm, former Audi under De Silva. And he's out here with BYD. And a lot of these, you know, big Western names are doing things. De Silva is also doing things here.
Yeah, he's an Arc Fox and, you know, those things. But.
And so it's, but, you know, definitely Porsche has been a trendsetter. And they will continue to be popular, certainly if the developed vehicles that are intended, I think, for a specific market like China, and which is what I think this Cayenne Coupe is.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Now, as always, do let us know about your tops, flops, and, you know, everything else that you want to know about the Shanghai Motor Show 2019. Yeah. We'll be back. I think the next show we actually will be back from is Frankfurt. So we have a little bit of a break now.
Yeah, we'll be doing some intermittent things.
Of course.
Meanwhile, if you want to see a photo gallery of this show, I'm going to try to put one up on Form Trends so you can access and see everything that we're talking about. But yeah, it's been a good show. I have certainly enjoyed it. It's been fun. And, you know, we're not actually going to take a break until Frankfurt. There's other things that we'll be talking about, less kind of, you know, show reviews like what you're
The next show review is going to be Frankfurt, so
and
so obviously we will do some more podcasts in between.
There might be another one anyway, surprise.
We might be going to a few other ones, but like you know, the next big one, the next big official one will be Frankfurt 2019. And yeah, so in the meantime, we hope you enjoyed that show and our review. As mentioned, this one was a little bit of a tricky one because it's just so massive. But we enjoyed it clearly and certainly. And we are looking forward to having you back very, very soon. And if you have any questions, as always, do message us.
Yeah.
And all the best from us and from Shanghai. Take care.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers.